Is that how you live the rest of your life? Is it all data? When you go to the grocery store, you're like looking at prices and analyzing prices, thinking about trends and prices, or is that sort of just not what you're going to do?
I don't want to give anybody the wrong impression, but I have a data set on every tank of gas I've bought since 1992.
No kidding.
It's really cool.
That's always great to talk to the expert, the gold standard when it comes to polling in Wisconsin and beyond, Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette Law School Poll. Great to talk to you, Charles, as always.
Good to be with you.
All right. Always
fun, especially after a big election.
Yeah, so let's get right to it. The big election in November, Donald Trump beating the current vice president of the United States, Kamala Harris. So I guess the obvious question, and I'll ask you some less than obvious questions, is how did the pollsters do when looking at that race now that we've seen the results?
Generally pretty good. I'm talking about all pollsters nationwide. The errors were smaller than they were 4 years ago and smaller than they were 8 years ago. That's the good news. And generally, the picture that was painted of the election was pretty close to what happened. On the other hand, the polls generally are still underestimating Trump's margin by a little bit. Again, a lot less than 4 years ago, but still by a couple of points this year. And for my poll, the Marquette poll, we were off by 1.9 points on the presidential race and by 1.1% on the Senate race.
Well within the margin of error, we should add.
Oh, yes. Well within the margin of error. Now, our final polls, in fact, all the polls we did this year for the presidency, were all inside the margin of error. We had Trump leading in some. We had Biden or Harris leading in some. And in the end, we had Harris by one, but that's with a 4.4% margin of error. And as I said, a 1.9% error on Trump's actual margin. Those are below our long-term average errors, so I think that's an improvement. And of course, I would prefer if we got them both exactly right.
Right.
But in the business of polling, getting it exactly right is pretty hard to do.
Let's go back to what you said about the Trump margin. Why is that still a thorn in pollsters' sides, if you can use an old phrase or old term? Why does that seem so hard to gauge the popularity of President-elect, former President Donald Trump?
I think the problem is very much with trying to reach a small but important segment of Trump supporters. It's not a surprise to anybody that people are skeptical about the press. They're skeptical about pollsters. And among Trump supporters, there's maybe 3 to 5% that we would love to talk to, but who don't want to talk to us. And trying to reach those folks so that we fully capture Trump support has been an ongoing challenge since 2016. As I said, we improved a bit in 2024, in 2020, and we've improved again this year, but we're still a little bit short of reaching Trump's full level of support.
Is there a way of weighting that sort of discrepancy or that gap? Is there a weighting piece we could add to the polling when it comes to presidential politics? Or is this just a Trump factor that we may see go away once he's no longer a candidate for a high office?
Well, I think it is a Trump factor in the sense that we don't see similarly large errors in state elections. So in 2018 and 2022, we did better getting the Republican vote correct. And of course, Trump wasn't on the ballot in those. Now, pollsters have tried new methods, including us this year. One of those was to weight the data to people's report of how they voted in the previous presidential election so that we bring that weighted data to match what we know the actual outcome was 4 years ago. That does seem to have improved the accuracy of polling among those pollsters who used that as a factor in our weighting. The concern about it is people don't always remember how they voted 4 years ago.
Right, right.
There's a tendency to say I voted for the winner, There's a tendency to forget that I didn't vote last time. So it doesn't come without some complications. But I'd say the record this year on balance, as of today at least, looks like doing that waiting to pass to vote did improve some of the work that we did, the accuracy of our polls. The other thing is we're just trying harder to reach those reluctant Trump voters. Instead of just phoning, we now send email and text messages and then follow up with a phone call if we don't hear back from people. And that does seem to have improved our response rate this year compared to 2020.
I was speaking at an event post-election, and the subject of polling came up. And a lot of people, it was the first question I asked you, whether there's a Trump effect there, and some people don't want to participate. But the other one was an interesting question from an audience member who said this, basically, and I'm paraphrasing. Are polls really serving a public interest? And I asked that not because I agree with that, that thing, but are they serving really the media's interest? Because you and I both know that when your polling comes out, there's immediate media attention. It's on every radio show. It's on every TV channel in town. It makes national news occasionally. And you're certainly the MU Law School poll is a gold standard. Is it really serving a public interest to know the snapshots on one day or one week of what people are thinking about a race?
Yeah, I think it is. But let me put it a little bit differently. I think, hey, if I were king of the world, we wouldn't lead with the horse race number of what's percent for Trump and what's the percent for Harris. Now, I lead with that because that's where all the interest is, mm-hmm. right? And so we get naturally an awful lot of focus on that. But looking back over the year, I think, did we get the story basically right? And I mean it in this sense. All year long, from last January till now, the biggest concern the public had was the economy. And on the economy, in every poll we did except one, Trump was seen as better able to handle that issue. On abortion, that was the second most important issue, but it was less than half as important as the economy, and Harris had an advantage on that. And then the third issue was immigration, which Trump had an advantage on. And if we look across the whole year, across seven or eight different issues, which one was most important to the voter and who did they see as better on that issue? Trump led on all of our polls all year long on that measure, not by a lot, but by 3 to 5 percentage points. I think that captured the dynamics of the issues over the race and especially people's economic concerns. The other thing that we saw was that during Trump's administration, around 60% of Wisconsinites said they were living comfortably. And over the last 18 months, this year and last, it's about 45% living comfortably. So I think those things together did a good job of capturing the issues that were driving the race and explaining why Trump had an advantage and that he eventually then won. And I think that story, if we could pay a little more attention to that, was, I think, accurately capturing the concerns voters had and how that was shaping their votes over the course of the year. Now, of course, the horse race matters. The score at the end of the football game is important. But some folks watch the football game for what happens between the first kickoff and the final whistle.
Here's a twist on the margin question. If it's within the margin of error in any of your polling that you do before the actual election date, should the lead story be not that Trump's winning, or in the case of this race, mm-hmm. Harris was winning, but that the margin of error suggests it's going to be close and that we really yeah. don't know.
Right. I think that's a perfectly reasonable thing. In fact, we avoid using the word lead in almost all of our polling. We simply state what's the percentage for Trump, what's the percentage for Harris, and what's the margin of error. And since we didn't have any polls this year that were outside that margin of error, we had no reason to say that anybody had a lead in the race. That doesn't last very long because people look at even a 1% difference and say, oh, so-and-so's ahead. Well, maybe, but maybe not. It's a very hard problem to avoid, though.
This one came up, too, in my audience, the panel that I was on. The difference, and I sort of know the answer to this, but I want to ask you anyway, and I want to get it on the podcast, between the internal polling that's done by campaigns, which I assume they pay for and probably find, well, you can answer the question, do they find polling places that are representative more of Republicans or Democrats? I guess the answer, in my opinion, would be yes. But what's the difference generally between what they do, internal polling, versus what you do at Marquette Law School?
Well, one thing is they have a whole lot more money to spend on
right.
than we do.
That's the obvious one.
But it pays off because they have tremendously greater resources to add on data to the polls. For example, the voter registration file for everybody they interview. But they also merge on from the campaign things from door knocks, data that's recorded there of what happens when you knock on someone's door. And they have way bigger research teams to analyze that data. So their underlying technology for reaching voters and conducting interviews is not much different at all from what I do. But they have these much greater resources to interview many more people much more frequently and to do much more complicated statistical analysis that works internally for their goals of knowing who to contact, who to try to influence, whereas that's not our purpose. Our purpose is to convey the broad scope of how people are feeling about the election and the issues that matter and how they feel about the candidates. But I'm not trying to tell you in the media or the public out there, you should go and target this 5% of the electorate because they're the key to winning. That's something that the campaign pollsters are desperately trying to do, but it's not our mission in the first place, and we don't have the resources and the money and the data to be able to do that effectively, even if we tried to.
You and I have talked before about how the contacting part of this methodology, the sampling of people on their opinions about candidates or issues has changed over the years. Any anticipation that something on the methodology side unrelated to that will change between now and, say, midterm elections or the next presidential election 4+ years from now?
I don't see any big changes immediately on the horizon. Our big change and a lot of the industry's big change for us came after the 22 election, and starting in 23, we started reaching people by email and text as well as telephone, inviting people to finish the survey online instead of with a live interviewer. So now about 80% do the survey online, about 20% by phone, and our response rate has gone up with this new method. And so those changes seem to have had a positive impact. Our accuracy was a little better this year than it has been in the long haul on average. And I'm not looking to make major changes again. We'll always be tweaking the little things, like is it better to wait to marital status or is it better to wait by age and gender?
Right, right.
Those are kinds of things that are very nerdy and inside the back office operation that we put out in our methodology statement every month, but they're not the kind of things that normal people care very much about.
It leads me to a question sort of on the personal side. When you're so data-driven and the methodology of polling and all of that stuff consumes you, and as I said, you're the gold standard for polling on issues in politics in the state of Wisconsin, is that how you live the rest of your life? Is it all data? When you go to the grocery store, you're like looking at prices and analyzing prices, thinking about trends and prices, or is that sort of just not what you're going to do?
I don't want to give anybody the wrong impression, but I have a data set on every tank of gas I've bought since 1992.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I'm not using it in a disparaging way, but you are sort of a nerd when it comes to that stuff.
Oh, I confess it. I am totally that.
All right.
I really don't know what kind of data work I'll do once I finally retire, right. But I'm sure it'll still be data.
I love it. Well, you've deserved some time off. Hopefully, you've scheduled some time off between now and the ramping up of all the other races in Wisconsin next year before we get to all of that.
I'm going to take a little time. I'm going to update my gasoline database because I haven't updated the database in a few months. Mm. So I'm sitting here with a big pile of receipts, and sometime in December, my Christmas present to myself will be updating that data.
Well, if you haven't looked at the data, or if you haven't filled your tank recently, the trend is down. It's I think I saw $2.49 at the station.
Prices are great right now,
yeah.
And I also monitor how much mileage I'm putting on my cars every week. So kinds of fun stuff to do with that.
I wish I had the attention to detail that you do. Charles Franken, director of the MU Law School Pool at Marquette's. Always appreciate the conversation.
Always good to talk to you. Thank you.
Absolutely.